What you do at Inatech is you take the specifications from the customers and you bring them down to the software engineers.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Well, then I just have to ask, why couldn't the customers just take them directly to the software people, huh?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because engineers are not good at dealing with customers.
Uh-huh. So you physically take the specs from the customer?
Well, no, my secretary does that, or the fax.
Huh. So then you must physically bring them to the software people?
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, sometimes.
What would you say you do here?
Well, look, I already told you. I deal with the customers so the engineers don't have to. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What's wrong with you people?
Hey, I'm Robin. Welcome to East Lake. This is a church for everyone, so it doesn't matter what kind of past you come from, what's going on in your life, everybody's welcome at East Lake. And we're in a series talking about jobs, work. What is it like to have something in life that we all share in common, but can be a little difficult to see how Jesus shows up there? How does work become more than a paycheck? And we have our theme verse in your notes. Grab your notes at the very top. Let me read it to you. Whatever work you do, do it with all your heart. Do it for the Lord and not for men. Remember that you will get your reward from the Lord. He will give you what you should receive. You're working for the Lord Jesus Christ. So the idea is, we all have it in common that we work, and so 50% of our waking hours are spent at work. If you're a person that works at home, it's 100% of your waking hours that you're working. And how is it something that we find purpose that's more than just something I have to do? And the whole key we've been talking in this series is being able to take our relationship with Jesus into the workplace, wherever that is, whatever job that you have, to see that he's there with me, whatever I face, whatever I'm going through. In fact, the whole key in life is how does my relationship with Jesus show up everywhere I go, that he wants to be with me. And in religion, you just come somewhere and you go to church every Sunday, but with a relationship with Jesus, how does that happen? Sometimes I can organize my life to where I have little compartments in my life, and in some of those compartments, it's just fine if Jesus goes, and then I have other compartments that I'd rather he doesn't. Now, I brought some pictures today of closet organizers. A life can look like that. You got an organizer with a closet, and everything has a little spot, and there's an even better one that I brought. Look at that one. I mean, you know, some of you people that are really organized and anal, you're salivating right now. It's like, you know, that's so awesome. I got a place for everything. And, you know, they have a huge word for people that are that anal. It's a big psychology word. It's called weirdo. But, I mean, it's okay. I mean, isn't that, you know, you get all the different compartments. And sometimes in life, you know, you can have your Jesus compartment, and that's he's just there. But all the other compartments, he's not allowed. Is there any area of your life, and it's off limits to Jesus? And then, I mean, just think about it for a moment. I mean, because if Jesus wants to be with me always, and here's something you can just jot a note, whatever area of my life, if Jesus is involved, that area of my life goes better. If you're a student, if Jesus is involved in your school day will go better. My finances, my money, I keep them over here on this side of the closet in its own special compartment with like 6 or 7 different deadbolts on it, and that's my money. I keep Jesus way over there in this little compartment, and the two never meet. But here's the truth. If God's involved in my finances will go better. Is there any area of your life, and you sort of keep it separate? I know it's hard for... you know, you get a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and you're like, oh, you know, I keep my boyfriend or my girlfriend over here, and I keep Jesus over there, and the two can't meet because I don't know how I'd ever have my relationship with Jesus show up in my relationship with my girlfriend. I mean, how would that ever work? But the truth is your relationship with your girlfriend or boyfriend will go better if Jesus is involved. And I know why we don't, because we think, oh, he's going to ask me to do something I don't want to do, or he's going to tell me I can't do something that I want to do, to which I would say, are you sure that it's better to try to do it on your own? Keep him in his little compartment over here. Or sometimes it's the, well, everybody knows rule. You know, peer pressure is like, everybody knows. You don't talk about Jesus at work, you know. And I'm not saying pouncing on people with religion. That's not what this series is about. We're talking about very practical things in this series. How does my relationship with Jesus go everywhere I go? And how does it show up at the job? And something very practical we're going to talk about today. When you're an employee, how does my relationship with Jesus show up? If I'm an employee, how does it show up? And to be a great employee with a great attitude, it's the big idea, right in your notes. My attitude determines my altitude. I read you something out of the Bible. Do everything readily and cheerfully. No bickering, no second guessing allowed. Go out into the world uncorrupted, a breath of fresh air. Circle that. In this squalled and polluted society, provide people with a glimpse of good living and of the living God. Isn't it nice when you get a breath of fresh air? That if I have a relationship with Jesus and he goes everywhere I go, he's with me and he goes into the job, I can be a breath of fresh air and people can catch a glimpse of God and good living. So some practical stuff. Number one, write in your notes, work hard instead of hardly working. We all know part of the Bible here, Proverbs. Hard work always pays off. Mere talk puts no bread on the table. We've all been that. You know, talking when we should be working. The author Sam Ewing says, hard work spotlights the character of people. Some turn up their sleeves, some turn up their noses, and some don't turn up at all. Isn't that the truth? There's a story about a student that went out and bought all brand new books, bought a brand new desk, a brand new chair with lumbar support. They even bought a brand new book stand so it'd be easier to read. They sat down in the chair and fell asleep at the desk. Abraham Lincoln said, things may come to those who wait, but only the things left behind by those who hustle. Hard work. Maybe you've seen someone at your work. The other day, someone was talking about one of the managers where I work, and they called him Lift a Finger. I was like, Lift a Finger? So what do you mean by that? I said, that manager wouldn't lift a finger to help anybody out. And I thought, oh, I wouldn't want that reputation. How's your reputation at work? Or if you work at home, how's your reputation with your family? How do they see you? You know, honest day's work, hard worker. If you were to check in, somebody were to check in on you. Great story about a young boy from the 50s, way, way back. He had a job at a hardware store, and he had to work super, super hard just to get the job. He'd go after school, he'd work in this hardware store. And one day he leaves work, he walks across the street, works into a right into a soda fountain. That's how you know it's from the 50s. Walks into a soda fountain. He goes in there. There's a guy behind the counter. And he asks if he can use the telephone. And the telephone is attached to the wall. How about that? You know, and he, can I use the phone? And so he goes over and he dials. And the owner of this soda shop is listening to this young boy. He says, hi, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to hire a boy to come over and work in your hardware store. Oh, you do. Oh, he has been. Well, is he working hard? Are you happy with his work? Oh, you are. Okay, then. Well, thank you. He hangs up the phone. He starts to walk out, and the owner of the soda shop says, hey, son, come here for a second. He goes, I'm looking for a guy to come around here after school and help me with some cleanup and some chores. And the boy says, oh. He goes, I already have a job. He says, well, why were you calling over to the hardware store? He goes, well, I work at the hardware store. I was just calling to check up on myself. was the last time? Checked up on yourself. Do you know hard work is an attitude that begins before the effort? Some people can work hard in little spurts or when people are watching. Maybe you know someone like that. They're lazy all day long and the boss walks in and elbows start to fly and they act like they're working so hard for 5 minutes. And you're just so pissed off after that. You're just like, you're right. We've all seen people. We've been people. You watch them. They always pick the easiest job. They find a way to talk and talk and talk and talk till the work's almost done. And you know. How is it at your workplace? Now, here's the thing. To decide to be a hard worker begins with my attitude. See, hard work is an attitude way before it's ever an effort. Once I have an attitude, and then the hard work follows. Here's a principle of life. It begins on the inside if I want to change the outside. Who I am on the inside is what changes my outside. When I have an attitude, if I work hard, I look for places to work. I lift a finger. And that's how I'll show up. And listen to me. We all get tired. We all get frustrated. We all want to step back instead of step in. But when I'm connected to Jesus, because here's what the Bible says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can have an attitude of a hard worker and it'll show up in my effort. Number two, great employees, great attitude, offer solutions instead of pointing out problems. There's a great story in the Bible. The man's name is Daniel. Maybe you've heard about him, Daniel in the lion's den. A lot of kids know that story. But this happened way later in his life. Earlier in his life, he learned what it was like to work in an environment that was a terrible place to work. He had a lousy job. Isn't it difficult to have a good attitude when your workplace is a terrible work environment? To have a great attitude when your environment at work is not so great. And Daniel knew a lot about that. He's a Hebrew. He's an Israelite. He lives in Jerusalem, and he's got this awesome job. And then all of a sudden, everything changes for him. He gets the ultimate transfer, corporate shakeup. Let me read you just a touch of his life. This isn't in your notes, but just listen. This is out of the Bible. Then the king ordered the chief of his court officials to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned to them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some of from Judah, Hananiah, Mishael, Asherah, and Daniel. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way, so he has a solution. He has sort of a problem. Let me give you his background a little bit. Daniel had a great job in Jerusalem. He's an up-and-comer. He knows the royal family. He works in the palace. I mean, this guy's got one of the dream jobs. Everything's going just great for him. And then this king, Nebuchadnezzar, comes from Iraq down to Jerusalem, and he conquers Jerusalem, and he takes all the really promising young men. He has this plan to make them captives. All the ones that are smart and they're good looking and they're athletic and they went to school, whatever the case. And he ships them all back to Iraq and he puts them in a 3-year internship program. Think about Daniel. And talk about your corporate shakeup. I mean, this guy went from having this super, really great work environment. He knows all the systems. He knows the boss. Everybody trusts him. They don't micromanage him. I mean, he loves his job. Don't jobs change sometimes and catch you by surprise? You love your boss, they get transferred. The new boss comes in, you hate them. Your coworker that you like moves, the coworker you don't like stays. They change your pay plan. They change your office. Maybe change your building. The products change. The systems change. The website's different. Just jobs change. Systems change. And we tend to get focused on the problems. Daniel's got a huge problem. He lives in a completely different country. They speak a different language. The systems are all changed. He has a different king. Completely different workplace. He didn't even ask for this internship. And talk about micromanaged. Can you imagine working at a place that they tell you what you can eat and you can't eat? You thought you had problems at your job. And instead of focusing on the problems, he does something pretty clever. He comes up with a solution. He goes to the boss. He says, listen, he goes, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I mean, we're going through tons and tons of changes. I think if you just let us have a little control over our lives, if you could just let us decide what we want to eat, I think this would work out. I mean, there's so many things changing in our life. If you just could give us that back, could we just pick our own food? You hang around with anybody at work and they spend the day just sort of rehearsing all the problems. They talk about all the things that are happening at your job. And they just sort of walk through their day talking about all the problems that are there. What's great about this story is it works. The manager decides to give him 10 days. He says, all right, I'll let you have 10 days. And he comes back after 10 days. He says, wow, you guys look great. And I checked your progress reports. And you're doing better than anybody else. Go ahead and eat whatever you want. Are you focused on solutions or are you focused on pointing out problems? Because it'll affect your attitude. Now, I'm not saying your boss is going to always take every single solution, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is the attitude. My attitude is entirely different when I'm talking about solutions. Boy, when you're a boss, a solution is such a breath of fresh air. I had someone call me yesterday, and we've been having a problem in one of our systems for the church services here, putting up the slides, and every week it's another thing. And a call comes in yesterday. I'm really super busy. I answer the phone. Hi, what's up? And you know, a lot of times you get calls on Saturdays when some of the team at church is going to be a problem. And they said, hey, I've been thinking about something that we're doing, and I think if we did it this way, it would be so much smoother. And it was like the most perfect solution. I mean, it made my whole day. I was like, wow. I can't even believe it. That is so, you know, when you offer a solution to somebody, man, it is a breath of fresh air. I hang up that phone. It's the best part of my day. Like, that was such a great idea. That solved so many things for us. We had a problem, but they brought a solution. Now, if you were to check in like our boy in the hardware store, do you talk more about the problems? Do you discuss the problems? Do you bring more problems, or do you focus on the solutions? Lots of changes around my job. Everything changing. It's amazing how many changes they've made in the last couple months. There's hardly anything that hasn't changed. Management's changing, money's changing, our systems have changed, the software's changed, changing people's desks, people are leaving and coming and going. And the general manager that runs the whole thing, this is a, I think they have about, oh, I don't know how many employees, 160 employees there, stops by my desk the other day, sits down, he says, hey, I'd like to get your take on some of the changes that I'm making. And you know, he starts to talk. I mean, that's always a little nerve-wracking. You're like, wow, do I say it? Do I not say it? You know, and he kind of created a pretty safe environment, so we started to talk about some of it. And I started to tell him kind of my take on it. And it's, at one point, he stopped, and he just referenced. He said, you know, there's people here that I can't take seriously because of their attitude. And I thought, gosh, you know, there's people here that have really important things to say, but they disqualified themselves because he's picked up on an attitude, and they have no voice in this change process. And that's what happens when I'm pointing out problems instead of talking about solutions. And this happens in schools, in families, and in relationships, and parenting, and at work. Now, how does it look in a very practical setting? Boots on the floor. What's it look like at a job? There's one of our members at our church in San Diego. And I want you to see a video. She's going to talk about it. Check this out.
My name is Lisette Vargas, and I'm a senior program analyst for the San Diego Housing Commission. When I first started at the Housing Commission, I was a secretary, and it was just so difficult. I mean, it was really hard. My boss isn't going to see this right now. I would sometimes get coffee from my boss, and she had this nightmare of an order at Starbucks, and the baristas would laugh. I think they felt sorry for me. I had more paper cuts than I can imagine because I just had so much paperwork to do all the time. It was kind of discouraging, and I really actually hated it. I just remember praying, God, just make me a blessing to my boss. Like, make me a blessing to this place. And that's when I really started to see things move. Well, the Housing Commission can be really competitive work environment, just like anywhere else. And I can remember times where I was really tempted to not put the best foot forward in training somebody new who I knew was gonna kinda come up and either take my spot or be in competition with me professionally. And that was just where I really felt challenged to be the employee that I knew God wanted me to be and to be the dependable person who I knew my supervisor knew I was. God has totally been faithful through my work experience, especially at the Housing Commission. I mean, He's provided for our family. He's allowed me to advance and promote and learn and grow in ways that I never thought I would have. I've been able to be a little hint of Jesus to coworkers during times of divorce, losing children, losing their jobs, and I've made wonderful friends, and I just really feel like it is exactly where He wants me to be at this particular season, even though I don't always enjoy it, but He still finds ways to make me happy, even in that work environment.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things we talked about is that it's in our work environment that God does so many things in my life. I work at the University of Mark Miller. You work at the University of... Because that's where you take classes every day in character building. Where you take classes in evangelism. That's where you take classes in how to treat people. And where you take classes in how to grow. God uses my work world. If I work at home, He uses my home life. That's my classroom. He does things in my life, and it transfers everywhere else. If you go to the gymnasium and you build your muscle, you're not just strong at the gym. You're strong everywhere you go. And the University of Mark Miller is where I'm gaining some of my strength right now. It's where I'm growing in my relationship. If Jesus is with me in the workplace. If I have the closet organizer thing going on, then I'm there by myself, trying to do it all by myself. Now, number three in your notes, stay up bait instead of constantly belly aching. It says in the Bible, do not use harmful words, but only helpful words, the kind that build up and provide what's needed, so that what you say will do good to those who hear you. And I always like to tell this story once a year. When I first got married, I worked as a salesman. Right before I went into the ministry to be a pastor, and there was an assistant manager there that just made it his business to make my life miserable. He just didn't care for me. He didn't think I was any good. He didn't think they should have hired me. His name was Vern Berg. And Vern was the oddest looking person on top of everything else. On the front end, he was kind of pointy, big bird looking guy. And on the back end, he had absolutely no butt. So this was like a buttless human, and he kind of walked in a buttless way. I don't know if you ever see anybody, you know, they not only do they not have a butt, but they kind of suck in even what they don't have. And so he kind of walked like this, but this was like this. And it's hard to be scolded by someone with no butt and kind of a big bird head, you know, and the boy did that guy get after me, Vern Berg. It was like there was nobody else even working there but me. All the time, tell me what I'm not doing. How come I'm not doing this? How come I'm not doing that? And I'm just early 20s. I've never done it before. I've got like two dress shirts that are 15 sizes too big for me. I own two ties. I don't even know how to tie them. I have to undo them and hang them on the door, put them back on, and cinch them up because I, you know, or I could buy the fake kind too. But I, and it just went on and on and on and on and on and on. And one day, Vern had embarrassed me again in front of some people in the store, and I just had it with Mr. No-Butt. Just had it with this guy. And I didn't care at that point. I don't know if you've ever been here before, but you have a temporary, moment of insanity where you forget that you have bills. You're like, I don't even care if I lose this job! You know, it's like, that's insane. But I got there. And I remember he was sitting at his desk in this office that they had, kind of off of the showroom, and it had a glass sliding door, and I saw him in there, and I had my moment of insanity. Because when you have your moment of insanity, your 3 minutes of cussing someone out and telling them what a hole they are is so much worse. I mean, I'll do that and go to the poorhouse. And so I marched back there, and I grabbed that door, and I'm going to really tell old, Vern No-Butt what life's all about. And I grabbed that thing, and just as I got it, Jesus is at my workplace, and the Holy Spirit said, don't do that. Don't do that. Go in and listen. And so I stopped just for a moment, and I opened up the door, and I sat down. And I looked at Vern, and he said, what do you want? And I said, I don't know, what it is I'm doing wrong here. I just came in to tell you that there must be something that's not working out because you're always mad at me. You're always angry. I just wanted to tell you, I don't get what's going on. And that was, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, because that was so different than 30 seconds before. And Vern looked at me, and the first thing I noticed is his eyes started to water up. And I was like, kind of taken back. It's like two dudes in a small room, uncomfortable, and he said, hey, you don't know this, but my wife's pregnant. And she's on bed rest. And it looks like we might lose the baby. And I just sat there, and he said, we don't know what's going on. He goes, I'm really stressed out. And right now, I realize that I've been taking it out all on you. And this is a grown man. He said, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with the baby. And I just realized I've been taking the whole thing out for the last, all on you. And I'm sorry. And man, of course, I didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of that was going on in his life. I had no idea that that was occurring. But I was so grateful that in a moment that I was going to react so differently, and I had no idea he was going through that, that Jesus was in my workplace. And he just got a hold of me at the last second. And Vern and I, we stayed friends for a long time after that. Happy ending. They got to have the baby. And he was great to me. He really helped me in my career. And we really became pretty good friends at work. And there was this, it was just a moment when I grabbed that handle to that glass sliding door. It was just a moment. Had I been just on my own, I would have flown in there like a buzzsaw. And when you keep Jesus in his own compartment, he isn't able to provide that strength when you need him most. And we do at work. I'll give you another example that's not nearly as happy. It just happened recently. I'm not glad about it, but I'm going to put myself out there. I'm at work, and they made all these changes, and it just seemed like one of the ramifications of these changes were in sales. That just seemed like a lot of guys were being dishonest all of a sudden, and taking commissions, and a lot of lying going on, and it was just bothering me, and this one person was involved in this deal, and I felt like they were lying to get a commission. They had lied about something, and it affected my check, besides, and a friend of mine as well. And so I thought they were lying. So, you know, I get an attitude about it. I hadn't said anything. They picked up on my attitude. So they cornered me one day at work, and they said, listen, you think I did something wrong, and I didn't do anything wrong, and you know, you think I did it, and I didn't do it, and I want to talk to you about it. And I said, listen, they caught me at the wrong time. This is not the time and place. I don't want to talk about it now. We'll talk about it. But I want to talk about it right now. You know, you think I did something wrong. You treat me, you know, like I did something wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. What do you think I did wrong? I said, I don't want to talk about it right now. This is not the time and place. Right now we're going to talk about it. You know, what do you think I did wrong? And I looked at him and I said, I think you're lying. Boy, and you could have heard a pin drop for a second. And then you could hear the pin go out of the grenade. I mean, they exploded. What did you say to me? You can't talk to me and call me a liar. Wait till I tell the manager. And they go storming out of the room. He called me a liar in there. He can't say that kind of stuff about me. For the next 2 days, they went to all the different salesmen. You know what kind of person he is. He called me a liar right to my face. A mess. The next day is a Saturday. I'm watching her go to everybody and talking to them, and everybody's shaking their head like this. You know, I'm like, oh, man, what did I do? You know, there's a part of me that's kind of happy about it because I wanted to say it. You ever had that happen before? You say something, you know you probably shouldn't have said it, but you're happy you did. You ever had that one? Like, part of you is like, oh, man, that felt so good. And the other side is like, that was so stupid. Have you ever had that, like, going on inside you? You know, and I just couldn't get it to wash. I came to church on Sunday, and I was with all you guys, and it just won't go. I tried the same thing you would have tried. Well, they should have heard that. That's what you call truth in love, you know, and trying to wash it through my soul so it'll go out, and it won't go anywhere. And then all of a sudden it hit me why it wouldn't leave so very, very clearly. I cared more about what she did than I cared about her. And that's why God wouldn't let go of it. Boy, it was so different than my Vern Berg day. So I had let a bad attitude develop at work because I saw different guys lying and cheating, and I got further away from Jesus. I got more and more bitter. And pretty soon I was just going to work all by myself, and when she kind of cornered me, and I didn't have any power from Jesus at all. And all of a sudden, it came out like it was fired out of a cannon. I had him in his little compartment all safe and said, no, Lord, you stay there for now. There's cheaters over here. I'll take care of them. I know how to handle this. So I went to her and sat down. And I said, hey, listen, I'm hoping for a happy ending. You know, a lot of times it does, you know. And I said, you know, when I talked to you the other day, I was like, I wish I wouldn't have said that. I really regret saying that, and I'm sorry. Would you forgive me of that? And it didn't go so well. She's like, well, I think you're just a very judgmental person. And she, I don't know, you know, sometimes you walk up to somebody and you open up like this, and they just kick you where it counts. You know, you walk up and you're like, I'm going to say I'm sorry. I realize I shouldn't have done this. And you're hoping they'll go, oh, thank you so much. It was me too. And you know, you have it all worked out in your brain how it's going to go. And they're just like, you know, you really are a jerk. And I felt the walls go up even higher instead of come down. It's neat when you go to someone and say you're sorry, forgive me, and you feel the walls go down. It's really shitty when you feel them go up. You're like, I really tried. I screwed up and I tried. And that there's something inside that knows, yeah, you reap what you sow sometimes, unfortunately. And now there's not much at work. I don't know how far I set it back. I don't know if she'll ever see Jesus in me. I don't know what'll ever happen. It's not good. They see me coming down the hall there. I lost my Vern Berg moment, and don't you do the same. Let him have the whole closet. Let him in every area of your life. Because every area of your life, including your job, home or away, goes better when he's there. Now, here's the bottom line. Jesus doesn't clock out when I clock in. For God is at work in you. He helps you want to do it. and he helps you do what he wants you to do. Some of you are probably hearing this today and you're thinking, I can't do that. God will help you do it. And some of you are hearing this today and you might even be saying, I don't even care about that. I don't even want to do that. It says here that God will help you want to do it. He understands it's a process. You know where we start sometimes? Being willing to be made willing. It's like, great, that sounds really great, God. I ain't doing it. I don't even want to do it. He doesn't clock out in your life then. He stays clocked in. Okay? Then we'll move you to want to. If you check in, how's your attitude at work?